Hello and welcome to Breaking Ground on iProperty Radio with myself, Carol Tallon, the show where we chat to industry experts to get a view on what's happening on the ground and to learn about new trends emerging within the construction industry and across Ireland's built environment. This show is brought to you in partnership with Place Engage, a data-driven platform for more successful public consultation and community engagement for your next development project. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Sean Golden, Chief Economist and Director of Policy with the Limerick Chamber. Sean, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Carol.
Sean, there's so many things that you and I could discuss that it's almost difficult to say where to start. But given that you are the Director of Policy within Limerick Chamber, let's talk about maybe just give us an overview as to the sentiment across your members now as where we are kind of in Q2 of 2024. It has been a challenging few months after a challenging few years.
Yeah, that's correct. I suppose, look, sometimes you can view business environment as a tale of two halves type of thing. You've the large FDIs and multinationals that are doing well by all respects, and then the SMEs that are kind of being crippled with the cost of doing business. Various initiatives being brought forward, like the minimum wage, mandatory sick leave, auto-enrollment pension. Really concerned about that, but I suppose one thing that all segments of our business representative kind of membership, Carol, have in common is that they're all having issues with housing. That's affecting coffee shops right up to big pharmaceutical giants. And it's where we dedicate a lot of our kind of policy research at the moment is into looking at the housing market, not just in Limerick, I suppose, but in the wider Midwest. And I suppose what can we do to bring forward suggestions on how to improve it?
Can we break that challenge down further? I'm conscious that you mentioned from coffee shops to FDIs that they all have the same challenge, but the reality is we know that a janitor in a school isn't paid the same as a janitor in Google. So on that basis, is the challenge equal, or what's happening across kind of for staff homes, staff houses, whether it's for rental or for the purchase market? Where are the kind of real challenges arising?
So I look, the biggest challenge, which I suppose is the first challenge that people are coming up against now, is the rental challenge. So you come out of college, we want to keep you in Limerick, we want to keep you in the Midwest. The first thing you're going to have to do is probably rent a place. You're not going to buy a place immediately. And if you are, fair play to you. Likewise, if we're recruiting people from abroad or if we're recruiting people from outside the Midwest, the first thing they need to do is have a home to rent. So if you look at how that's affecting talent retention and talent attraction, very serious considerations there, because if one thing we did so well on over the last couple of years in the Midwest is creating new jobs, attracting people in. But I suppose the worry would be is if we don't get a grapple on rental issues and purchase issues as well, is that can we continue to do that? And I think going back to your question about the janitor versus the Google employee, it is certainly not an equal market at all. So we launched a rental barometer recently, and essentially what that did was it looked at the open rental market over the space of a year. It's a data set that we created ourselves from going out and looking at various sources, online estate agents, etc., and compiling our own list of rental. But one of the things we found that if you're a single person, a one-bed apartment isn't going to become affordable for you in Limerick until you're earning about 70,000 euro a year. Now, one of the things we took as affordable there is the 35% of net income, which is kind of broadly considered amongst a lot of people as affordable. But obviously, there's other considerations. But when you have a single person in Limerick not being able to afford something until they're earning 70,000, that's quite difficult. And that leads, I suppose, to upwards wage pressure on businesses as well, which goes back to the original point of increased cost of doing business. So not only do you have general costs like insurance, premiums, etc., but you're also having to grapple with the housing crisis. And in our last survey, we found that 18% of businesses around the Midwest have now taken part in the housing market on behalf of their employees in some shape or form, be that take out a lease on behalf of their employees or put them in touch with an estate agent or whatever else. So it seems to become more common. And like particularly worrying from our rental barometer as well is that we looked at single parents and what they would need to earn to affordably rent, a two bed place, and it was up around the 90 to 100,000 mark, which is a very well paid job, no matter where you are, but particularly in Limerick. I think the average kind of median wage throughout Ireland at the moment is kind of mid 40s to 50. So these are massive salaries if you want to rent somewhere that's within 35% of your net income.
Sean, is I need to clarify those figures, because are you saying that for somebody to rent, for a single person to rent a one bed home, to rent it, they'd need to be earning 70,000?
Yeah, so if they want to rent it within the affordable bracket, Carl, which is
As
that
in one third of their salary.
exactly 1/3 of their salary, they need to be earning about 70K a year. And that's based off the figures that we have for the cost of rental over the last year in Limerick.
And
So,
a single parent has to be earning 90,000.
yeah, up around the 90,000 mark, because I suppose they would need a bedroom for themselves. This is all based off bedrooms, bedroom for themselves, and a bedroom for the kid or children. Whatever, it's very difficult as a single person. It's even more difficult as a single parent, but it's easier than if you're in a relationship and, be it a cohabiting relationship or whatever else, because the tax brackets kick in for a single person so much earlier. So it's actually it's funny when you look at it and you break down the data, and we have done in the report that, a couple on 80 grand a year combined can kind of comfortably afford a three bed, so 40 grand each. Whereas if you're a single person or a single parent, it's so much more difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I know you describe it as funny, and I know you mean kind of like an anomaly, but the reality is it is exceptionally discriminatory policy making.
Yeah,
Like this
yeah.
is not a this kind of outcome doesn't happen by accident.
No, we don't put, I think, Carol, Ireland has backed itself into a corner so much in terms of there's an overall housing crisis, but there's about 100 different crises within that. There's a crisis for single person accommodation. We don't really build one beds. We certainly don't really build them in Limerick. We might build them for certain cohorts of the market, such as social housing. But in terms of actual market housing, a one bed is few and far between. So what we can see now is the price for one beds is kind of drastically increasing over time. So it 100% is. It's, you would have thought with Project Ireland 2040 and the increase in motivation to densify that we would have taken a more serious look at these kind of smaller homes. And we haven't really, like, still over the last year, the most common place to rent across Limerick was a three bed house.
Explain the kind of market dynamics at play here. Are you looking at just Limerick City and County, or are you looking at the broader region?
So I for this one, Carol, we're just looking at Limerick City and County. So the way we actually looked at it was we took a broad approach, really. We looked at the whole county, all 206,000 inhabitants, but we also separated it down by local electoral area. So these are the areas that people are going to go to the polls to in June to vote for their local councillors. And the reason we did that, I suppose, was to put it into perspective for decision makers in their own area, kind of how bad it was. So, like, for example, now Limerick City West, I can tell the inhabitants there, the businesses there, the councillors there, that on average they have 12 homes per month to rent for the last year. Only 12. And they're right beside Raheen Business Park, which is home to some of the world's largest multinationals. I can tell them that, 64% of their rentals over the last year were apartments, and the average cost for a house is €2,200 a month. So it's kind of split down that way to give a granular look at Limerick, because it's actually not equal at all. When we look at city versus county, we can see that supply is better in the city, sustainability in terms of BER is better in the city, but it's more affordable in the county.
And where are people choosing? Because, we but a lot of times when we talk about the rural, and despite Limerick City obviously being a city, that actually Limerick County is a massively rural county. So in terms of rather than just putting this into the bracket of affordability, do you see do you do does your data factor in anything in terms of choice? Are people choosing rural?
No, it doesn't in terms of choice, because what we've seen, and certainly this is feedback from our members, is that people are taking houses where they can get them, Carol.
Okay.
We have a number of members that have reported to us that their employees will travel down from Offaly, from Galway for work because they can't get somewhere to rent in Limerick.
Okay, so then taking it that going outside of the main urban area, the reason for that might be affordability. You know, just before the weekend, we saw a new policy being kind of bandied about, that there is a proposal on the table. I don't know how serious it is or how far that has progressed, but in terms of government policy, that a proposal to that we could would essentially see tax plans to discourage new estates in remote areas, which would cover a huge amount of rural County Limerick.
Yeah, absolutely. And from a obviously it was very high level information that came out, but it's quite bizarre. I mean, we're in a supply crisis now, and you're limiting supply again, in terms of where it can be provided. We know it's more expensive to provide it on brownfield sites, but rather than, I suppose, looking at it in another way, which is how do we now put a train out to these locations? Limerick has a rail line the whole way out to Fines that touches Adair, Patrick's Well, a couple of others. So rather than bringing it back to the principles of transport-oriented development, which is, build on these areas and make sure people can get into work, it just seems like we're banning it completely, which makes absolutely no sense at all from both a housing provision perspective, but also the social cohesion of rural Ireland. Why would you discourage that more? We want to increase these places, these vibrant places, and encourage people to live there. And if something like this goes forward and we're just encouraging everyone into the cities, it's going to cause issues as well. Like we've seen that happen in Dublin for the last couple of decades, where we've encouraged everyone into Dublin. And I don't think anybody agrees that that works.
I think Limerick is a particularly interesting marketplace to look at, and it has long been thus that, you have such a huge student population, but you also have very strong FDI. It's the place maybe where the IDA has had huge success. And you have a strong entrepreneurial spirit. So you have a strong SME sector, but you also have people who need to live. But by the last stats, I'm aware that actually Limerick was this had recorded or ho plays host to the area that's the highest second in terms of deprivation in Ireland. I don't know if that stat is still accurate or still relevant. But that's a huge mishmash of contradictory data. So how do you go about actually, from a policy point of view, how do you go about addressing all of those very disparate needs?
Well, it's funny because even though they're all quite different, their needs are pretty consistent across the board. So like, housing is a need no matter where you are, be it a kind of deprived area or whether you're a director in a multinational or whatever. So when we're looking to advocate for our members, we're trying to find the commonalities, where we kind of get the most bang for our buck in terms of advocating for it. So that's kind of the stuff we're looking at. In terms of policy making, it should really be the same stuff. Like all the material that we produce, Carol, is evidence-based. It can be backed up with data, from the CSO, from data we collect ourselves. So it gives a good overall picture, I suppose, of the business environment. And every so often we'll try to stray into the other stuff to add value where we can. But I mean, even if you think of the deprived area stuff, a lot of that is within state-owned land. So we could be providing homes there for people that moved out of the area to come back into the area, or to create a more kind of diverse neighborhood, but we don't. And that's one of the biggest issues we have here in Limerick is the underutilization of state land and how long it's taking to deliver on that state land. So if we're talking about policy making to kind of, tackle all these issues in all these sectors, then we really have to kind of start holding people to account that are responsible for lifting this up. And at the moment, we're not doing a great job at that.
Yeah, and obviously we're involved in placemaking across the country, and I would say Limerick is one of the worst examples of people being made promises 30 years ago that have not been delivered on today. And despite we know there are we know there's work underway, but you're right, it's exceptionally slow. Is there anything we can learn from what's happened in Limerick and what continues to happen in Limerick, and how hopeful are you that some of the initiatives on the ground are going to deliver homes in the foreseeable future?
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, I think I have been hearing about the O'Connell Street project, Carol, since I was 16, I think it was. It was in secondary school and it was delivered when I was 32. So that kind of goes from when I first heard about it to when it was actually finished. We set up the strategic development pipeline in the chamber to actually track these things. You know, when they were first kind of promised, when they went out for tender, when planning was submitted, etc. And we have a portal that's free to use on our website now where people can go in and look at these public capital projects and actually see what's holding them up. And to be fair, most public organizations are only delighted to be included on it. It would be great to see that expanded across Ireland because that way then you can really hold people to account in terms of provision. In terms of would I be hopeful, I don't know if I'm a hopeful person by nature, Carol, but I think the directly elected mayor, whoever gets in, if they're a good candidate, will have a lot of sway in terms of improving how Limerick provides infrastructure and holding people to account and lobbying certain people. So I think, and to be honest, at the start, I wasn't sold on the idea of a directly elected mayor, but over my time in the chamber and looking at Limerick and the wider Midwest more closely, I'm firmly in the camp of we're getting a mayor now. We need to get a good one that's going to solve some issues, not all the issues. So we have to be very realistic about that. So that's where my kind of hopefulness comes from if we get a good mayor.
I'm really glad that you brought up that, because that is something I want to discuss. But maybe just before to kind of finish off the last point, because you glossed over it there, but it is such a huge initiative, the strategic development pipeline. So you have prepared that through Limerick Chamber, but it's the kind of thing that actually, if we had right across the country, so whether other chambers were to follow suit, or in fact the state was to look at this as an initiative, but it is such a critical tool and probably underused tool across the development and construction industry, that I would say tap into this. And if you're a member of a chamber in another part of the country, recommend a similar initiative, because it's something that actually is hugely valuable. But you've mentioned the directly elected mayor. This is another example of there are times that, God, the resilience of Limerick really shines through. The innovation of Limerick really shines through. And here's another example of Limerick taking a leadership position across Ireland. So now there will be a role of directly elected mayor after what, a decade of this being kind of anticipated. Would that be
Yeah,
fair?
I think it's spoken about a long time. We went to the polls in 2019, I think it was. So there was there, and to be fair, like there was a couple of people that were driving it at the time, Carol, but not many, to be fair. There's a lot of people jumping on kind of the bandwagon now. But at the time, to my memory, there was only a few kind of core people involved with advocating for it. So yeah, it's been on the cards now for 3, 4 years. We've been waiting around for it to see what the story is, and now we're finally getting it. So I think there's a couple of more candidates to come out, but we've over 10 at this stage. A lot of good candidates, and it'll be on the same day as the local elections.
People will be familiar with the concept of a mayor. It's a ceremonial role, maybe one that doesn't have huge influence. You're not really in a position to have a major impact. What's different about a directly elected mayor?
So I'm happy to say that it is not a ceremonial role, but I think that's contingent, Carol, on the right person getting in, because they can still delegate a lot to the what will become the director general of the local authority. He or she would be a CEO now, so their responsibilities, their direct responsibilities, will be for strategic planning, of which includes housing. So we will be lobbying them extremely hard in terms of providing more housing on state land here in Limerick, and what else they can do. They'll also be involved in reviewing the development plan, creating a new development plan. That'll probably be one for the next mayor that comes in. They're also responsible for preparing the local authority budget and bringing it to council for approval. They'll also have a separate budget themselves of about 8 million a year, and they'll have about 5 staff, one of which is a special advisor. One of the other responsibilities they have is for roads and transport. So if you take what we've spoken about so far in terms of, rural Ireland housing, they have influence on two key sectors here, housing and transport. But one thing that's often kind of maybe glossed over a bit is the people of Limerick, all, 206,000 of us, are going to vote for a person that will be the head of Limerick, that can lobby on our behalf, that can raise issues that we've been all saying for the last couple of years or whatever, that's an issue. And they can use that evidence base that we're all providing to lobby a minister, lobby a state organization with a unified voice for the whole county of Limerick. So I think there's a lot of scope, but I think it's highly contingent on the right candidate actually getting in.
You talk about speaking with a unified voice, and look, Ireland is a democratic, we have democracy, and yet there are people who don't feel that their voice counts. So having a directly elected mayor is a significant step forward, but the directly elected mayor and their five staff with their 8 million budget need to find a mechanism to listen to the voices of those 206,000 people, otherwise it will have failed. That doesn't exist in Ireland.
I fully agree with you, and it's probably one of the good things about the this new directly elected mayor role, Carol, is that the walls that might be up on a local authority as is will start to be brought down depending on the mayor. They can be very transparent if they want to. They can publish their diary, they can hold briefings, etc., etc. But again, highly dependent on the mayor. There's no requirement for him to do any of this. So, like, I would love to see a very transparent mayor that's going to, televise council meetings, that's going to publish their diary. You'll be already be able to look them up on the lobbying register, but that go out and actually meet people and meet communities and listen to feedback. Because I think at the moment, the consultation process is how these things work, and it can be very prohibitive to some people. I do ours on behalf of the chamber, and I liaise with our members, but that's because I'm familiar with it. I'm familiar with the policy behind it. I essentially get paid to sit down and look at it, which can be very difficult for, someone that's working 9 to 5, or someone that's retired, someone that's not great with technology. So I think a good mayor can break down a lot of these walls. And maybe we didn't vote for him or her, but in the long term, they might win us around by, going out and being transparent and bringing people in for sure.
I like that description of the walls of local authority, and there are people within it who would want those walls not to exist as well. I truly believe that. But we also have the political influence, and I know all politics is local, and I think when you get down to these kind of decisions, you realize actually maybe it's not as local as you'd like it to be. You talk about the importance of transparency, which is important, but we need bravery as well. This cannot be a political role. It has to be a
No,
service role.
it is, Carol. Like, it's very much, what they can do for Limerick, what they can do for the people of Limerick. Also, how can we help along as well, the likes of the chamber, whoever else, other stakeholders, individuals. But it's an executive function. It's not like a regular political appointment. So I think when we're all going to the polls and we're looking over the next 2 months at who we think suits us best, we definitely have to look at past delivery experience as well. A lot of promises are going to be made. We'll have to decipher whether a mayor can actually deliver on this promise within the legislation, whether they have shown in the past that they can actually do something here. So I do think that it's a requirement really to not view this as a political role, because they'll be taking over a lot of the functions of the CEO, who'll become the Director General, and performing those functions themselves. So it's not as if they'll be a TD that have 100, 200 staff behind them, very much there to drive their mayoral program. And I think that goes far beyond kind of politics, but they'll need to interact with the local councillors as well. There's a lot of reserve functions the councillors will have, so they'll definitely need to know how to operate in the political environment as well, and win everyone to their side. It's going to be a bit difficult.
I don't think it's possible to win everyone to your side. That's no, genuinely, I don't. I mean, and to be honest, it almost seems like a contradiction in terms to have an executive role that will have to carry out those executive functions that can be very unpopular, and yet you need people to vote for you. That's a real contradiction. So I think this is a really interesting process for other local authorities to watch and learn from. And I think it's very brave for Limerick to take this leadership position to do it. But I don't expect it to be I don't expect it to be uneventful. I think it will be difficult. And I think it's very brave for anybody to put themselves forward as the inaugural role,
Yeah.
because that's going to be the test.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of Limerick Chamber, will Limerick Chamber, on behalf of its members, be adopting a position in support of any particular candidate, or what's the position that Limerick Chamber will be taking?
No. To give you a short answer, no, not in particular. We will be issuing our kind of priority document, Carl, which is going to focus on the directly elected mayor, the councillors, and the European elections. And then I suppose we'll be meeting candidates in relation to that and saying this is what we would like to see in Limerick, which goes far beyond just kind of advocating for businesses. To be fair, we do a lot of work in terms of advocating for the city, county, and the region. So not endorsing anyone in particular. We will definitely be putting our kind of cards on the table in terms of what type of person we see doing well in the role. But again, like, we're willing to work with everyone across party lines, independents, whoever else. At the end of the day, our job is to create a better business environment and a better, I suppose, more livable Limerick, more livable Midwest, in terms of attracting, retaining talent, retaining businesses. So willing to work with everyone, but we would have specific asks for sure.
Okay. And this might be an unfair question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Are you nervous, given that we are in such a difficult situation at the moment, in Ireland, not just politically, but there's a huge amount of anger. There's a huge amount of disappointment out there. We saw that through the referendum. People really made their feelings known in a way that maybe was unexpected. Unanticipated by sitting government and by a huge number of people. Are you nervous? Are you nervous about what that anger could translate into?
I am nervous about certain aspects for sure. I suppose one of the unique selling points of Ireland, Carol, is our stability. In terms of, we're kind of pretty neutral in terms of, what we have, in terms politics wise. Another unique selling point we have is the people we produce. We produce absolutely excellent graduates from third level education to apprenticeships, etc. So you want to create an environment where they see a future here. My concern, I suppose, at the moment is, and from a housing and properties perspective, is that it will become expected that we have these issues. Like health at the moment, everyone knows we have issues in health. Does anybody have faith that the issues in health are going to be solved? I don't think so. And I am very worried that if that travels across into housing, that we're going to lose all our hard-fought gains, that we can't provide for workers, we can't provide for businesses, etc. So that's a serious concern that I have at the moment. Not necessarily worried about any instability coming into Ireland. I think, it seems that every time you listen to a statement or budget or press release, everything is a priority. And when everything is a priority, nothing is a priority. The priority is to increase public transport. Fantastic. The priority is also housing, retrofitting, new housing, so it's very difficult to see where the priorities actually lie. Every time you see a bit of kite flying in the newspaper about various aspects of the housing market, because we're not really increasing supply by that much, they're all cannibalizing each other. So you have homeowners that are trying to get on the market, then you have certain departments that are coming in to buy houses for certain cohorts, and everyone's competing against each other. And that's really difficult. And it can be very tough for, I suppose, a taxpayer to kind of see that happening, that they're sitting back and they might need 70 grand to rent a place. Do they see a future here? But we want to keep all those good people. So that's where my concern comes from. I think if the issues in health kind of coalesce across the housing and it's just expected, I think that's a very dangerous place to be.
Yeah. Look, I completely agree, and that's not a Limerick problem. That's an Ireland problem, and it's we don't seem to be learning the lessons that we're seeing in other jurisdictions by not understanding public anger and by not addressing it, by not listening to the community. So it's something that needs to turn, but it's difficult to see how that's going to happen. I suppose. Finally, because Limerick Chamber is doing really stellar work, not just in terms of the strategic development pipeline, but also kind of your monthly monitor and now the rental barometer. What are your expectations for Limerick City and County over the next 12 to 18 months?
It's a good question, Carol. Like I think we've a lot of priorities in the chamber as well. Now we do kind of we're probably a bit more targeted in terms of what we want to advance. Housing is our number one. It affects everyone. We want to see quicker action on state-owned land. We want to see better utilization of our Georgian and old stock. And actually protect our built heritage. We're not great at it. But also we're looking at the long term in terms of renewable energy. Limerick, the Midwest, has a huge part to play. So we're going to continually advocate for that as well and make sure that Limerick, the Midwest, is the epicenter of it. Because at the end of the day, nobody has a resource like we have with the Atlantic. So we want to keep that at the front of everyone's mind. It's a long-term thing. It's not going to be immediate. It'll probably be delivered long after I'm gone in the chamber, but it's important that we do that. And the other thing is transport as well, which affects everything. So my hope for the next year for Limerick is that we start to see this tide turning in terms of housing. We get a good mayor in that's willing to tackle the issues that they can actually tackle. And they're honest about the ones that they can tackle. And we start to see the tide turning a bit. I think, am I seeing the tide turning in terms of housing? Not particularly. I think if you look at completions for 23 in Limerick versus 22, we delivered about 26 more homes. It's not where we need to be. From my own analysis of looking at people that are living with their parents, etc., like we're have a gulf of about 1,800 homes per year. So it would take a lot for the tide to start turning, but I would like to see some positive indications. But I think a lot is going to change. We're going to get a directly elected mayor. We're going to get a new council. There's going to be a general election within the, I suppose, by March next year. So a lot is going to change. Where we might get a new Taoiseach in the next couple of weeks, depending on what way things go. So a lot will change, but I would hope to see some positive change. Will we see it or not is a big question.
No, and look, that's very fair. I mean, look, one of the things that jumps out to me there is that there's definitely an opportunity for local or regional home builders there as well. But again, that will come down to viability and certainly government policy supporting development as opposed to putting increasing barriers in its way, whether it's through planning or other levies. So look, as always, plenty of opportunity. I'm really looking with interest on the process of the directly elected mayor. So we'll definitely be following that with interest, and maybe we'll touch base with you after that election and when we have a bit of clarity about who's going to be in the role and they start to talk about their plans and what that might mean for the city and county. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your expertise. That was Sean Golden, Chief Economist and Director of Policy with the Limerick Chamber. Our thanks to show producer Katie Tallon and to the production team at Hear Me Roar Media. Also, thanks to Place Engage for making these conversations possible. And finally, thank you indeed for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next episode of Breaking Ground. In the meantime, please be sure to check out all of the other Irish and international real estate and construction shows here on iPropertyRadio.com.